Hello, good evening to you wherever you are. My name is Edmond Senanutlochu and this is Lawdio. Today we are dealing with environmental law, compliance, straight to business. Compliance, what is environmental compliance? Environmental compliance covers a broad range of laws, regulations, and standards framed by governments and other regulatory bodies to protect the environment, even when businesses continue to manufacture and reach out to several markets. This is to enable organizations to think about the impact they are leaving on the environment. It reduces pollution, protects wildlife, and improves the green cover so that we may bequeath a greener world to posterity while pursuing our economic development. Now, there's the traditional approach to environmental law, which has its own problems. Now, some of the problems are the adverse relationship between states, which is negotiations between states. Number two, complex nature of environmental disputes. Three, expenditure involved in the traditional approach. Four, the unsettled character of some of the laws in the areas. Example, in the Trail Smelter case, the law was unsettled on whether a state has a responsibility towards another state. Now, there's a need to move from the traditional approach to a more preventive approach, which requires a comprehensive regime. There must be a measure put at national and international levels. Now, let's look at implementation at state or national level. States implement international environmental obligation in three approaches. One, state must adopt a national implementation policy or measure. Two, state must ensure that their subjects comply to national measures subject to the jurisdiction and to their jurisdiction and control. Three, states must fulfill their obligation to the relevant international organizations to give effect to international obligations. Now, national law at level of compliance. Once a state ratifies a treaty, it has to adjust its national laws to adopt the international treaty in order to give it effect. So that is one of the ways by which a state can ensure compliance, by ratifying its treaty. Once it ratifies a treaty, it must adjust its national laws to adopt the treaty. Now, number two, reporting. In order to ensure compliance, states usually are required to ensure reporting of implementation measures. Okay, so now let's look at which compliance at the international level, compliance to international environmental law at the international level. Now, which persons have the right to enforce international compliance or compliance to environmental law? Which people have the international legal personality to do so? Can it be at the instigation of a state or an international organization or a non-state actor? Now, the extent to which any of these actors may invoke the enforcement mechanisms depend on one, the extent and the legal basis of the alleged violation. Two, the subject matter involved. Three, the international legal obligations at issue. Now, if a state is to enforce environmental policy at the international level, the state must have locus. The state must be able to demonstrate that it is an injured party, Article 42 of International Law Commission on State Policy. Now, aside an injured state bringing an action, there have been occasions where a state other than the injured state can invoke the responsibility of another state to obliged by environmental law. Now, if the obligation that has been breached is owed to a group of states or owed to an international community as a whole, A non-injured state may bring action to invoke the obligations by another state to that international community. And this is in Article 48 of the International Law Commission on State Policy. Now, it is important to establish and distinguish the following when bringing a state for an international damage. One, a situation where a state permits activities which causes damages to its own environment. Two, when the state permits activities which can damage the environment of another state. Three, when a state permits or causes damage to the environment in an area beyond its own natural jurisdiction. Now, in the case where a state damages its own environment, international law allows other parties to bring an action against the offending state. Damages which are caused to another state or consequential damages to its people or the people's property or economic rights, a state can bring an action against that offending state causing the injury. Example is the new trail smelter case and then the nuclear test cases. Now, where a state has in the absence of a treaty, a right, or where a state has, in the absence of a treaty, the general interest in protecting the environment in areas beyond its natural jurisdiction, such as to allow it to exercise right of legal protection, it's quite difficult in the absence of state practice. Now, when there's a violation beyond a state's environmental bodies in an area which is terra nullius or a global commons, who can bring an action against it? Now, this is answered in the Barcelona Traction case. In that case, Barcelona Traction Light and Power Company Limited was a corporation incorporated in Canada with Toronto headquarters that made and supplied electricity in Spain. It had issued bonds to non-Spanish investors, but during the Spanish Civil War, which is 1936 to 1939, the Spanish government refused to allow BTLP to transfer currency to pay bondholders the interest that they were due. In 1948, a group of bondholders sued in Spain to declare that BTLP had defaulted on the ground that it had failed to pay the interest. The Spanish court allowed the claim. The business was sold, the surplus distributed to the bondholders, and small amount was paid to shareholders. The shareholders in Canada succeeded in persuading Canada and other states to complain that Spain had denied justice and violated a series of treaty obligations. However, Canada eventually accepted that Spain had the right to prevent BTLP from transferring currency and to declare BTLP bankrupt. Of the shares, 88% were owed by Belgians. The Belgian government complained, insisting the Spanish government had not acted properly. It made an initial claim at the International Court of Justice in 1958, but later withdrew it to allow negotiations. Subsequent negotiations broke down and a new claim was filed in 1962. Spain contended that Belgium had no standing because BTLP was a Canadian company. The judgment was that the International Court of Justice held that Belgium had no legal interest in the matter to justify it bringing a claim. Although Belgian shareholders suffered if a wrong was done to the company, it was only the company's rights that could have been infringed by Spain's actions. It would have been direct shareholder rights only that were affected, and the state of the shareholders would have an independent right to action. It was a general rule of international law that when an unlawful act was committed against a company, Only the state of incorporation of the company could sue, and because Canada had chosen not to do so, that was the end. The idea of a diplomatic protection of shareholders was unsound because it would create confusion and insecurity in economic relations, as shares are widely scattered and frequently change hands. The court also decided that a state is bound to give the same legal protection to foreign investment and nationals for natural or legal persons when it admits them to its territory. Now, let's look at the enforcement of international law by international organizations. So, mostly it is states who bring actions to the ICJ when environmental laws are flouted. But international organizations other than members also bring action against violating states. And we could see this in the UNCLOS 1982. And the Council for International Seabed Authority. Okay, now let's look at enforcement by non-state actors, which could be individuals. Under international law, non-state actors are not legal persons except within limited confines of international human rights law, when that right is both national and international. Look at the case of Ogoni people. So this brings us to the end of compliance to international law, international environmental law. Thank you very much. We'll meet on the next podcast.